This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3162 for Tuesday, the 15th of September 2020. Today's show is entitled Introduction to Ansible. It is hosted by Klaatu and is about 45 minutes long and carries a clean flag. The summary is Klaatu demonstrates some Ansible tricks and how Ansible can be a better choice than scripting.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
You're listening to Hacker Public Radio. This episode's about Ansible, hard S, soft S, whichever one you prefer doesn't matter to me. Point is, Ansible is an automation tool that's quite popular right now among sysadmins and even developers and just general users because it helps you configure a computer or more likely a set of computers from, you know, anywhere from 2 to 200 to 2000, who cares, in such a way that you are able to define what you want that computer to end up, the state that you want that computer to end up in. So if you think about the difference between that statement that I've just given you, whereby you create a file specifically in YAML format, yet another markup language, YAML. You create this file in YAML and you describe the system with pretty strict syntax. You can't just type out natural language, like just a description, but you describe in this configuration file how you want that computer to end up. And Ansible goes in and makes sure that it does whatever it needs to do in order to get that computer into that state. Think about that versus, for instance, what you've probably been doing, which is create a shell script that invokes all the different commands that you would run manually anyway, and runs all of those commands. Now, you do that once, you do that twice, whatever, and eventually you realize that your shell script is being a little bit too robotic. It just trudges forward no matter what. So you start learning little tips and tricks like set dash E and things like that to error out when something doesn't work, and you learn about the install command instead of the copy command. You learn about make dir dash P instead of just make dir, and little things like that. But the more you do it, and the more you add, and the more stuff you have to go in there and change, the more you realize that your shell script is a very verbose way of doing things. You know, there are things that you have to check on. You have to, especially if you're talking about cross-platform, right? If you've got a Slackware machine and a Red Hat machine, then you suddenly you have to stop and you have to think, okay, well, I want to install, I don't know, let's say HTOP. I want HTOP and Emacs to be installed on these machines. But on Slackware, I need to do Slack package to install HTOP and some other process for, no, Slack package for Emacs and some other package for HTOP. Actually, that might not be true, but in either way. So on Slackware, it's going to be one set of commands or maybe two sets of commands. And then on RHEL, it's going to be a completely different command. It's going to be DNF or something like that. So now you've got to check to see which of those two things are available on whatever host your shell script is dealing with, and you have all these fail conditions and these conditional statements and things, and it becomes a complex thing to get right. And you know, the great thing about shell scripts is that once you get it right once, then it's good to go, until of course it isn't. Sometimes a little bit of extra maintenance is required, and that's normal, but the more lines that you have in a script or in a program, the maintenance of that thing gets more complex, even if it's just a matter of, well, now you've got more lines to check with your eyeballs and make sure that they're valid right now. Even if it's just the expense of looking at it, it does become more complex. And the more hosts, of course, that you need to target, the more and more complex your script becomes. This is where Ansible comes in, because ideally it can save you from all that work. Now, if you're like me, Ansible is, or a new software can be a little bit, not daunting, but confounding, because, you know, someone hands you a new software and you think, oh, cool, this is great. It's new open source software. This is really exciting. I should learn how to use this for whatever reason, you know, whether you suspect it's going to improve your workflow or whether you just feel like you should get to know it because a job opportunity at some point in the future might mention that software and you want to be able to honestly and confidently say that you've got experience with it. You know, whatever your motivation, you think, okay, I should learn this thing. But then you look at your current setup and you think, well, I don't know what I need to do with this, you know? So Ansible can be like that, because Ansible almost, in a way, like if you kind of look at it a certain way, if you squint and look at it, you know, from sort of a certain angle, it's almost like a programming language or even a non-interactive shell almost. You know, people praise certain shells for delivering, for returning data objects rather than text. And in a way, that's kind of Ansible, the Ansible experience. It's all written in Python. And so when you do things, you get feedback, but the feedback is in Python error statements. And certainly if you programmatically interact with Ansible, then you can get data objects back rather than just text that you have to then pipe through grep and awk or whatever to parse it in a meaningful way. So it's a little bit of a platform, and if you don't have anything to run on that platform, then it becomes a little bit difficult to certainly integrate into your real life, much less to even get started with. So what I'm going to do is take you through a pretty common use case of Ansible, which is just installing software. This is the bare bones Ansible demo, right? I mean, this is not anything complex, nothing fancy. It's not really even that exciting, but by the end of it, I think you're going to see why Ansible can be exciting and what it could possibly do to change how you interact with more than one computer. Let's get started. So Ansible, I mean, the easy way to install it is through your package manager on Linux. If you're not on Linux, then from what I understand, there are lots of easy ways to install Ansible on other platforms as well. One of the advantages of Ansible is that it is cross-platform. I've never used it on any other system other than Linux, but I have targeted other systems other than Linux. So I've used it on Linux, and then I've deployed it against machines that are Linux, Mac, and Windows. So I've had the experience of cross-platform targeting, just I haven't actually used it on anything but Linux. So I'm going to speak from the Linux perspective here. So you can install it with your normal package manager from some software repository. I would say that it was pretty common at this point. Shouldn't be too hard to hunt down. So once you've got that installed, you should probably make a project directory. That's generally a good thing to do for Ansible. First, just because it's sort of the best practice organization, you know, for better organization. But also because eventually, once you get really good at Ansible, you will discover that the layout of your file system of the directory in which you keep the main Ansible file, the layout of that directory structure can actually, you can use that so that Ansible kind of auto detects things. It is a little bit like, for instance, if you are writing in Python and you want Python to sort of know where to look for local modules, you can put it in a specific directory and Python will look there and use modules out of there kind of just automatically. Or if you are running like an auto make, you know, GNU make file or an auto tools project, you have a certain directory structure that you can work around, but certainly if you make it a certain way, then auto tools just kind of will gracefully inherit that and take it on. So we'll make a directory called package_installer or whatever. You can name it whatever you want. And then you would want to create an empty file in that directory called site.yaml. I'm going to take a drink of coffee while you do that. Okay, so you've done that. That coffee is really good. So there's site YAML, and YAML, if you've never written in YAML, is sort of this weird kind of I think JSON is a subset of YAML, or YAML is a subset of JSON. No, surely JSON is a subset of YAML. It's a horrible format. It uses indentation very strictly to represent inheritance. Why no one could come up with a language or a configuration language that just acts like, for instance, org mode. You know, org mode uses the asterisks to imply or to delineate inheritance, and it's a beautiful thing. It's one asterisk is the top level, two asterisks is under that first one, three asterisks is under the second one, two asterisks is a new secondary level bullet point, and so on. You do that, it's so obvious, it's so clear, so easy to change. But YAML, you use indentation. So it's, if you like Python, you're going to love YAML. So here is a very basic YAML configuration for Ansible. And I'm going to do this in such a way that ideally this will apply to all of your future Ansible configurations. So the first thing that you'll do, because YAML lint will complain if you don't, is you start your little YAML document with three dashes. Dash, dash, dash. That's the first line. Next line, you do a dash space. So this is kind of your first bullet point, if you will, and it's all the way on the left. So it's dash space hosts colon localhost in this case. Localhost is really just right now, it's a designation computer that you're sitting in front of, the one that you're typing at right now. This is the one that you will be running your Ansible file against. So that's an important line, because eventually you will use that line to tell the computer which set of hosts you want to run the Ansible file on. And that's a powerful thing, because if you can create a slash etsy slash ansible slash hosts file, put a bunch of hosts in there, and then you can kind of designate them into certain groups, you know, so it can be like, I don't know, the design department, the finance department, the, you know, the servers in data center foo, and the servers in data center bar. But for now, you're just telling it, go for the local host. I think it will give you a warning about the local host anyway, because it doesn't know what you're talking about. But that's what I do to remind myself that, hey, this is just right now, this is just working on the local machine. So keep that in mind. Okay, next line, you'll have to indent that so that it aligns with the H of hosts. No marking, just some spaces. I think it ought to be two spaces. So the line item for this is tasks, T-A-S-K-S, and then a colon. Now, tasks are this is the sort of the flow that you're going to follow quite often. It is hosts, tasks, name. If you remember that, you can remember really sort of that's your boilerplate for most Ansible playbooks. It'll be hosts, tasks, and then the name. You can have lots of names, but you'll have just a hosts and a tasks at the very top of the file. Hosts, tasks, name. Ansible files can get pretty squirrely. They can get really, you can break them out and put them in different directories. Like I said, the folder structure of your Ansible, of this directory that you would in theory be building out, can host a bunch of little include files, sort of little snippets of YAML, and then it can kind of assemble this big playbook from all of those different YAML files. So it can get complicated, and not everything will look exactly the same depending on what portion of the playbook. Forget all about that right now. If you're doing one YAML file with configure with instructions in it, you're going to open up with hosts, you're going to give it a tasks, and then you're going to name something. So the next line will be space space to get under hosts, and then two more spaces, space space, to get under tasks, and then you're going to do a dash space name colon, and then some human readable string such as install my favorite packages. And that literally, it's just for you as a human. It's going to print that out when you run Ansible dash playbook later. It'll print that out so that you know what step it is processing when you look up at the screen. Easy. Okay, so the next two lines are going to be about permissions. And here is a place where Ansible uses its own terminology, which will confuse you at first, and it will possibly make it difficult to remember. But if you think about what it's saying and the fact that it's cross-platform, it actually makes a lot of sense. So next line, we'll do a space space to get under hosts, space space to get under tasks, and then space space again to line up with name. So this is an item within the dash name block of text. So that's, I think that was six spaces over. The keyword here is become, B-E-C-O-M-E, colon, true. So this is telling Ansible that it is going to have to become a different user. And then the next line, we're going to specify which user it needs to become. And so that'll be, again, six spaces over, and it'll be become underscore user colon root, R-O-O-T. And that, of course, tells it to grab those administrative privileges before proceeding on to the task at hand. The way that it does that is going to depend on the system, and you need to kind of have that configured in advance, because if Ansible cannot, you know, Ansible is not a magic bullet, if it cannot escalate privileges, then it is going to fail that task. Now, we've got a flag that we can pass on our test system to be prompted for the password. But in real life, in real usage, if you want this to be automated, you'd need to set up some pseudo rule, at least on Linux and on Mac, on a POSIX system that has sudo on it. You'd need to set up with visudo or whatever, some rule such that the, you know, whatever tasks you're having Ansible perform are allowed by that system, or some other authentication system that maybe you're using. But that, know that if it needs to escalate privileges to do something, then you need to account for that somewhere, because Ansible can't just magically bypass that, I would hope. Okay, next up in this task, which is named install my favorite packages, we need to invoke an Ansible module. Ansible modules are kind of where everything actually happens in Ansible. We you know, like I said, it's kind of a platform. Ansible is, it's a little bit like, I don't know, like I said, a programming language, or even a non-interactive shell, if you could think of it that way, where in order to make any use of it, you have to know what you want to do. And, you know, in terms of, you know, if you think of it like learning a new Linux command, you have to learn the command. You have to know what the command is. You have to know what options there are to that command, what arguments it requires, and so on. So instead of commands in Ansible, well, you can run commands through Ansible, but, you know, in this analogy, instead of commands, we have modules and module names. These are all listed on docs.ansible.com/ansible/latest/modules/modules_by_category.html. If you just do a search for module index, or just go to docs.ansible.com, you'll stumble across the what they call the module index. And they start out by breaking it into categories. So you've got like cloud modules and clustering modules and command modules and crypto modules and so on. So there's a lot there. There's also, I think it's files modules. That's a pretty handy one. You can make directories and stuff on your computer with like a make directory module, really. It's really cool. Or you can make sure that files are not there. You can add or remove files with Ansible. It's very, very cool. But anyway, you can also just look at all modules. There's a selection there at the top of the module index for all modules. In this case, though, we do have a category that we know we're looking for, and that's packaging modules. And sure enough, if you click on packaging modules, you get a list of all the packaging modules available, and it starts out by language, interestingly. So it's got things like pip and pear and npm and maven, or maven underscore artifact, I guess, and so on. And then it gives a sort of subcategory as OS, and that has everything from apt to DNF to Flatpak to Mac ports to OpenBSD underscore package to Slack package. What's the other one? Pacman. So there's a bunch. I mean, I'm not going to list them all. I mean, there's a bunch of them here. URPMI, Yum. Yeah, all kinds of different ones. Homebrew for Mac again, I guess. Well, and Linux, I guess, technically can use Homebrew. But anyway, you get the idea. Lots and lots of different ones. I mean, heck, they have Slack package, so you know that if they've got that, they probably have what you're looking for. And in this case, I'm going to look for DNF, because that seems like a sort of an obvious one. So here's a DNF module, and it tells me that it's got a little bit of a, I guess I'd call it a man page, but it's online. It's on the docs, ansible.com. DNF manages packages with DNF package manager. And it tells you all of the different parameters that you are able to pass through this module. Now we're going to stick with the bare minimum, just to keep in the interest of keeping this simple and easy and quick. But there are quite a lot of parameters there that you could pass. And the module index is definitely, I mean, that's your friend when you're learning Ansible, because again, otherwise you have no idea what to do with it. So just treat it like you you know, think back when you were learning Linux, or maybe you're learning Linux now, you know, you probably have some kind of reference document or something somewhere, whether it's online or in a book, sort of nudging you with reminders about what is actually possible in this weird thing called a terminal. And that's the same thing with Ansible. You keep that module list open somewhere if you're sitting down to do something with Ansible, because it will sort of give you ideas and remind you of what you could possibly do with Ansible. And in theory, you should be able to do, you know, all of the essential stuff and a little bit more. And I think generally you'll find that that's true. Okay, so the module name is DNF. So this is indented enough to be under that dash name category. So we're still within this task, which is named install my favorite packages. So that means we're going to indent 6 times, and we're just going to name a module DNF colon. Now, if we had passed something weird like Penguin, then it would fail, because there is no such Ansible module that I know of called just Penguin. But we know that it's called DNF, so we're invoking the module DNF. And that is why we are allowed to just type out DNF colon. You can't do that just arbitrarily. It has to exist. And it does, but you have to look it up in the module index. So DNF colon. And now on the next line, we're now under the DNF section. So that means you're going to do 2 spaces to be under hosts, 2 more to be under tasks, 2 more to be under name, and then 2 more to be under DNF. So that is 8 spaces over now. State colon present. And if you look at the module under the parameters, you see that there's an item called state. And it says that your choices for state are absent, present, installed, removed, or latest, and the documentation says whether to install with either present or latest, or remove with the keyword absent a package. Default is none. However, in effect, the default action is present. Unless the auto remove option is enabled for this module, then absent is inferred. So in other words, state is not a required parameter for this to work. I am using it here because, number one, I wanted to demonstrate to you how you would use this module. But number two, I like the explicitness of this, just like hosts, localhost. I like being able to, you know, when I look at the module or the playbook, the Ansible YAML file called the playbook, when I look at this file later, I want to see, okay, I've got the DNF module here. Oh, and I'm definitely installing stuff, because I'm saying that the state I want to leave this computer in is that these packages are present. And you know, you don't have to put that in there. You can just know that the default is present. But I figure if you put it in there, then you don't have to remember that the default is present. There's the state present, and you know, okay, the action here, the actual action item that's happening, is that I'm invoking the DNF module to make sure that these packages are present. Okay, so next line would be name colon. And once again, if you look at the module index, and there's examples in the module listing here, so you would know all of these things, or you'd have a hint about them. And you see that name is actually the required parameter of a type list or elements equals string. And it says a package name or package specifier with version, like name-1.0. When using state equals latest, this can be asterisk, which means run dnf-y update. You can also pass a URL or a local path for an RPM file. To operate on several packages, this can accept a comma-separated string of packages or a list of packages. And it has an alias called package, PKG. We'll get back to that sort of thing in a moment. But it's telling you here that the name can contain either a list or a comma-delimited string of packages. So for this use case, I'll use the list version just to kind of get used to that. But later we might switch over to something else. We'll see. So let's say that next line then, under name colon, would be 2 spaces to get under host, 2 spaces to get under task, 2 spaces to get under name, 2 spaces to get under DNF, 2 spaces to get under name. So that's 10 spaces now. And then we do, because it's a list, we'll do a dash space htop, and then the next line, 10 spaces dash space Emacs, or whatever 2 packages I said that we were going to install with this. I think it was HTOP and Emacs. So now we've populated the name element with a list of 2 packages. The syntax here annoys me. I don't feel like this is super intuitive, but if you to look at, like, why does name get a list but nothing else, but name itself is not a list, but name under tasks is a list. To look at it, it's not intuitive. There are reasons. It's because tasks can contain a list. So the fact that we have a dash name colon install my favorite packages is simply indicating that one of the tasks that we want this, that we want Ansible to take, is this one. If we wanted to add a second task later, we could do a dash space name and continue. The problem here, of course, is that name is the same literal, is the same string as name used in the DNF module, and so it seems confusing. But if you look at the module index and just kind of follow its instructions or its implied instruction, then you'll kind of get used to it. And certainly, if I'm kind of scrolling through this DNF one, I only see one thing in red which says required, and that's right next to name. And then right under the name element, it tells me list or elements equals string. And then the description explains that I can do a list or a string separated, a comma separated string. So I know that the two types of syntax I'm allowed to use there in my YAML file are either the list, which is the dash space whatever, or I could have just typed in htop comma emacs after name colon, and that should work as well. Okay, so now you can save your file and run it through YAML lint. If you don't have YAML lint installed, you may find that in your package or in your software repository. If not, I do think that there might be a Python package for it. I might be making that up. But YAML lint will scan your YAML file, your playbook, just YAML lint, and then the path to site.yaml, and it will make sure that you've typed valid YAML. And YAML's pretty strict. It'll get angry at you if you use tabs instead of spaces. It'll get angry at you if your indentation is off. It'll give you cryptic messages, error messages, that will take you far too long to decode. But at least it warns you before you ever get near Ansible whether or not your file is valid. So things to look out for, like I say, tabs, don't use tabs, use spaces. Do provide a blank line at the end of the file, or rather I should say a new line character at the end of the file. It doesn't need to be a blank line, it just needs to be terminated with a new line character. And make sure that, yeah, indentation is right. And that's really, really tough sometimes to sort of intuit. It can be complicated, but just kind of double check everything. Try to think about what seems like it should be inheriting what, and so on. And I mean, pretty much once you've done your initial named task, everything at least has to be 2, 4, 6 spaces over, right? Like that, nothing would be further back than that. Or else you've started a new task, and that needs to start with a dash space name, okay? So now you can run it technically through Ansible, but there's one more check you could do, which I quite like, which is Ansible dash lint. And again, if that's not installed for some reason, I think you can find it as Python 3 dash Ansible dash lint with DNF on Fedora, or if you're running Ubuntu or similar, you could do apt install ansible-lint, and YAML lint for that matter. So ansible-lint is basically, I mean, it's a linter program, obviously, from the name, and so it'll check your site.yaml file for compliance from Ansible's point of view. In other words, Ansible lint knows a little bit more about what to expect in an Ansible playbook. I have found it's not as amazing as I would like. I think what I really want is almost like an ansible-playbook --dry-run my YAML file, and that's not what this is. So I do run it through Ansible lint just for kicks, but don't expect like miracles. You can still error out in Ansible and have passed ansible-lint under certain conditions. Okay, assuming you've gotten no errors, or that you have gotten lots of errors and managed to get past them, then you can actually run this thing, and that would be ansible-playbook --ask-become-pass. Now that's the option that we're using sort of in our test environment, knowing that we haven't made any special allowance yet for Ansible to escalate privileges and run something with sudo permissions on your system. And then you'll point it to the file. So in the example case here, it would be --package_installer, or whatever I said the directory was called, and then slash site.yaml. It prompts you for your become password. Type in your your pseudo or your, you know, whatever whatever authentication method you use. I'm assuming it's pseudo. Type that password in, and then you'll see some things kind of fly by. For instance, it'll acknowledge that there's that this is a play. That's what Ansible calls it. It's a play or a playbook. So this is a play running on localhost, and then it will identify that there's a task. And as part of this task, it will kind of very quickly, it will mention that it's gathering facts, and that's okay. We'll get back to that in a moment. That should pass no matter what, and then it'll continue down the same path, the same task, and it should say install my favorite packages or whatever we named that task in the YAML file. So that's that human readable bit. So we know what it's doing. It's trying to install those packages, and this might take a while. It needs to determine whether those packages exist within DNF and so on, and eventually it'll get past that, ideally, and it'll do a play recap for us in which it tells us that everything's okay, maybe something has changed, hopefully nothing was unreachable, hopefully nothing failed, and so on. Now, sometimes you'll run this and it will tell you just that everything's okay, and that means that you've already had, for instance, HTOP and Emacs installed, which in my case that is true. But if they weren't installed, then you'd run that and it would say that zero things were okay and that two things had changed. And you would know from what is in that task, you would know that two things changed because you didn't have HTOP or Emacs installed, and now you do. So it's just a little bit of a summary of what happened when this thing ran against your computer. And that's it. That's Ansible. That's an Ansible playbook at work. Now you might be thinking about what you've just written and what you've just witnessed, and you might think it's actually quite a lot of work for what amounts to running a shell script or even something like a multiplexer, you know, just launching tmux and opening like eight different terminals on eight different systems and then just typing in sudo dnf install htop Emacs and hitting return. I mean, that would be it. That's all you'd need to do, and you'd be done, and you wouldn't have ever had to deal with Ansible. So why are we bothering? That's a fair question. So you probably know that Ansible, as I said, is pretty good at cross-platform performance. It can deal with lots of different operating systems, lots of different distributions. And if you were to try to install applications across several systems, then unless you've got a completely homogeneous environment, you might have to account for that. Now, heck, in my own home, I don't have a homogeneous environment. I'm sitting in front of a Slackware machine right now. I've got a Fedora laptop on my left and a RHEL laptop on my right. And who knows what else? Oh, I've got a NetBSD Raspberry Pi and a Debian Pocket Chip. So that's not a homogeneous environment by any means. So the likelihood of you having a completely homogeneous environment may be rather low. It might not be. I mean, you might be in charge of just a bank of RHEL boxes and that's all you have to deal with ever, in which case, you know, a simple shell script may actually make more sense. But let's try something different with Ansible. Let's try a different tactic here. The DNF module is cool, and it's good to know about modules, certainly, because again, modules are kind of like your commands for Ansible. Those are the things that when you think, oh, what should I do with Ansible today? Go look at the modules. That'll tell you what is possible. But we're going to try it from a different angle this time, from a little bit more of a almost programmatic. So throw away everything you did. Well, don't throw it away. Just set it aside for now. We'll make a new directory. We'll call it cross_package. And again, you can create a site.yaml file in cross_package, open up a file, and remember the boilerplate, hosts tasks name, htn, so also three dashes at the top, but if you don't do that, YAMLint will warn you, so --, return, --, hosts, --, let's do all this time, because actually that's what Ansible really wants to see. Now this, it won't matter, like all doesn't actually matter to us, because we haven't defined a bunch of hosts in our /etc/ansible/hosts file, which you could do, but we won't do that right now. And then we'll do return, --, to get under hosts, and of course next up is tasks, --, and then return, and then --, to get under host, --, to get under tasks, --, name, --, install my favorite packages on any distro, or on any OS, and then return space space to get under host, space space to get under task, space space to get under name. So that's six spaces. We'll do become colon true, next line become underscore user colon root, and then the next line, same indentation here, still six spaces, action colon. Now, Action is a plugin of Ansible, and unfortunately, I haven't found a whole lot of documentation about sort of with a good explanation of what a plugin is in Ansible. And it's a little bit annoying because I don't quite have the firm grasp on what's different between a module and a plugin. Either way, action is this fancy thing that you can cause Ansible to do. And within this action, it's a bit of a loop, really. And this has recently changed as of this recording, so I'm kind of new to this syntax. But it is a loop. It's telling it to take an action. And the action that we are using here is, or rather the thing to define what we're doing, is an Ansible variable. And these are a little bit magical, and you kind of have to dig around the docs to find them. And I don't love how sort of obscure some of this stuff is. However, there are commands, and you can read in the docs to get a feel for this. There are commands to divine what variables are actually getting defined. It just so happens that during that gathering facts step that we saw immediately after running Ansible-playbook, it said tasks, and then it said gathering facts. And I said, we'll get back to that in a minute. This is that moment where we're getting back to it. Gathering facts. This is one of the cool things about Ansible, is that when it goes out to a host, a targeted host, I'm going to take another drink of coffee. When it does that, it scans that host, and it gathers what it calls facts about that host. And I say it weirdly like that because, like, it is a fact about the host, but that is also like the term that Ansible documents and Ansible uses, is it's a fact, which can get confusing sometimes because, you know, it's also just a normal word. So, you know, you're talking about facts and people think you're just talking about truths, like universal truths, but you're actually just talking about a thing that you got from Ansible one time. So it gathers facts, and it dumps those facts into variables in part. And one of those variables is Ansible underscore PKG underscore MGR. Well, that's handy because that means that we know, or well, we don't have to know, what the package manager is for whatever host we send our little Ansible script out to. The way that you invoke that is curly brace, space Ansible underscore PKG underscore MGR, space curly brace, and then you do the options, or the parameters rather, that would be associated with that command. And that can get tricky because you never know, some package managers might have a different way of doing things. But generally speaking, for the simple stuff, you can do stuff like space name equals, and then htop comma emacs, space state equals present, space update underscore cache equals yes. Those are pretty universal to most package managers. Shouldn't run into too much of a problem with that set of commands. There's a little bit of experimentation that you sometimes have to do, but that command generally should work. So the syntax for this, again, I don't love how like vaguely non-intuitive this is, but it's you've got your action item under, you know, six spaces in. So it's under hosts, it's under tasks, it's under name. That's three times two spaces, so six spaces. Action colon space greater than symbol, so it looks like it's pointing to the right, and then return, and then two spaces to get under host, get under tasks, to get under name, and then to get under action. So that is eight spaces now. You're indented, and then you do your curly brace Ansible package manager, curly brace name equals htop comma transmission, state equals present, update underscore cache equals yes. And that's it. So that's just 2, 4, 6, 8 lines of code now, and you can save it and run ansible-playbook-dash ask become pass path to that site.yaml, and it'll run. It'll run on, well, any host defined by you in /etc/ansible/hosts, and it will install those packages with whatever package manager is on that host. Now, once again, little bit of fiddling around with it might be necessary because, as we all know, probably different packages on different distributions sometimes have different names, and on different operating systems, I imagine it's even worse. So you might have to account for that somewhere, and there are different ways to do that. Like, if there are decisions that have to be made based on, okay, which distribution is this running on, or which OS is this running on right now, you can get all of that from the gathering facts stage, and then make decisions based on that. You can use the file structure, the folder structure in your project directory to your advantage, and make Ansible sort of assemble a larger playbook based on lots of little snippets and so on. And I'm not going to go through that right now because I think that's a little bit more detail than we probably need for a basic intro to Ansible. But I just kind of wanted to demonstrate the logic, the difference in logic of writing Ansible. Well, I wanted to demonstrate using Ansible, right? So we've done that. We've now installed some packages with Ansible. It was very cool. But there's that difference in logic in kind of that in that sort of laundry list sort of recipe mindset of, well, I know how to do this thing, and it is with the DNF command. I feel comfortable with that, so I'm going to reverse my knowledge. I'm going to back my knowledge up into Ansible and kind of make that sort of fit, and just I'll just re-implement my shell script or my manual interaction with my terminal in Ansible. And that's fine to do to begin with, absolutely not a problem. However, if you force yourself to think about different potential targets and start introducing problems for yourself, it helps, because then you have to start thinking a little bit more broadly. You think about problems like, oh, wait a minute, what if the host that I want this to run against doesn't have this command on it at all? Or how do I find out the user directory for that particular operating system? Or the name of this package is different on this one as it is on that one? Or whatever the problem might be, you come up with new problems, and you start to see kind of how Ansible, the abstraction offered by Ansible, helps immensely managing all of these different systems. Because no longer do you have to come up with conditional things for every action that you want to take. You can just kind of establish, okay, well, what kind of computer are we on? Oh, we're on this one? Okay, well, then run all of these things. And maybe there's one item or two items or five items that you need to take a sledgehammer to a little bit and think, okay, well, the way that it implements this action is completely different than anything else, so I'll have to hard code that specifically for that host. But there are ways to do that. But the bulk of your actions will be write once, run many times with just some clever variable substitution and leveraging what Ansible already knows about the host that it is about to run on. And since I didn't mention it at the start, I guess I will also mention here that Ansible is really nice because it is an agentless. Well, is it agentless? Let's call it agentless. Yeah, agentless. It's agentless. It is an agentless thing. It runs without. It runs on your sort of control center, and it uses SSH to go out to the hosts that you're targeting. So the hosts themselves don't need anything Ansible installed on them whatsoever. It's kind of cool. If you've ever had to set up like a backup scheme for a bunch of computers, or an update scheme for a bunch of computers, or a reset scheme for a bunch of computers. Like in a classroom, for instance, at the end of every class, I need to go out and make and reset all of these computers back to their sort of default, unaffected state. How do I do that? You'll know that having something that all you need to do, you install it on one computer, on your control center once. You install it once on your control center, and that's it. And suddenly you can go out to all of those hosts and manipulate in whatever way you need them to be manipulated, and you're finished. It's as simple as that. It's just so refreshing. It really is. It's really, really nice. So check out Ansible, install it, and try to start doing some simple tasks with it. Even as I often say, even if it feels stupid, even if it feels like it's taking 10 minutes or an hour, whereas if you would just type the thing in with your keyboard, it would be done in 3 seconds. Like, set that hour aside sometime and figure it out on Ansible just to kind of get your feet wet. And next thing you know, if you get started with it, you may eventually find a use case for it. It took me forever to get started with it. Like, Cobra 2 would tell me to get started with Ansible. He would tell me all the time to just start using it. And then, sure enough, 2 years later, 3 years later, I'm like, oh, actually, yeah, it turns out he was right yet again. I guess I will get started with Ansible. But you just have to kind of get kick-started with it, and then you find excuses to continue to use it. At least that's my general pattern, I think, of usage. Check it out is my point. Very useful. Hopefully this has been good to at least introduce you to the concept, maybe get you over any kind of trepidation. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next time.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.